There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
So what did I miss? What did I miss?
Righty-ho. Now, the first place that we're headed to today is Rome, where some rather bloody battles are set to return to the Colosseum.
Not real gladiator fights, though. Health and safety rules forbid that. But they can't stop film nights, can they?
I suppose they can't really, can they? Yeah. So from this Thursday, a giant 45-foot-long screen will be set up every night in the arena to show a half-hour film about the Colosseum's gory opening in 80 AD.
Remember that, Mark?
Yes. I was there back then. Same hairstyle as well. When Romans enjoyed 100 days of non-stop gladiator fights.
It will depict savage clashes between wild animals, which when you go there now and look down, there's no floor anymore, so you can see where they kept all the wild animals if you've been to the Colosseum. And it will also show a CGI naval battle like the one that was staged by flooding the arena during its opening back in 80 AD.
Yeah, so can you imagine what it must have been like having a night out back then?
I can, but yeah. It would be weird, wouldn't it, getting ready for it? In front of the mirror, like, ooh, what earrings
should I wear? What are you wearing
tonight?
Oh, red, I think, yeah.
It would just be weird, and then talking about it afterwards, oh, I really wanted that guy to win. Shame he's dead now.
Yeah, I know. It's, oh, it's
very
odd.
Isn't it?
How could that be entertainment?
I don't get it. I don't think I would have liked it.
But having said that, they made a great movie out of it, didn't they? Russell Crowe did all right.
They did. If you are interested in going along to this show, they're going to be showing it twice a night. 150 seats are showing, and it's going to be really popular, I think. 6 million tourists currently visit the Colosseum. Am I right in thinking that you never went in?
No, I went and got my selfie in front of it, and I didn't go in. I think it was time constraints, the reason being, because we had to catch a train to go and pick up a cruise ship, so there were queues. You know, if I'd have got in that queue, I'd have never got in anyway, or I'd have missed the train and missed the cruise.
I went in and did one of the audio tours. I was really interested. Love history.
Yeah.
Not very good at audio tours. I had the numbers slightly wrong.
So everything that was being described, you couldn't see it.
And I was on about number 13 when my friend Lou went, "You're on the wrong number," which is why you can't see it. Turn around, you idiot. The tree's over there. Anyway, yes, Colosseum is going to be showing films from the end of May. That's happening. So yeah, let us know if you do go and you do enjoy that. Now, this next story is the greatest story of the year, if your name is Mr. Mark Lloyd, is.
That's me. Hand up.
Well, this is for you, Mark. Details have been revealed of the cruise of a lifetime.
Really?
Now, I reckon you could blow all of your pension savings on this and everyone would understand. No one would blame you for it in your family.
What makes it so spectacular?
It's the world's longest continuous cruise.
All right.
Like the sound of that?
Yeah.
It set sail from Greenwich in southeast London on August the 31st next year.
We're all going on a summer holiday. No more working for a week or two. Fun and laughter on a summer holiday. No more worries for me.
Is Cliff Richard going to be singing on him?
He might be looking for a new gig by then.
Yeah.
Over 245 days, the Viking Sun, it's called, and it's 930 passengers, or 929 plus Mark.
Yeah.
We'll call it 113 ports, 59 countries, and every continent except Antarctica, which is great because you don't want to go there because it's too cold.
Absolutely perfect for me. I'm loving every bit of this. Now, the ship will not return to Greenwich until May 2020, by which time you'll have had selfies with and fridge magnets picked up from everywhere. The statue in Rio, the Redeemer statue, the pyramids in Egypt, and the paradise island of Bora Bora. I'll have to buy another 4 fridges to put them all on. Liverpool as well, Holyhead and Ullapool also feature on the itinerary.
Are you interested?
I am.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk money then, if you're interested.
All right.
I'll sit you down, cross from me on my desk. You just have to sign this little piece of paper at the bottom, hand me your cash.
Right.
The basic veranda stateroom, which is the one I think would put you in, you're like a basic kind of guy.
Yeah, I am. I'm a working class chap.
Starts at 333,000 dirhams per person. Ooh. Now, I know that sounds expensive, sir. However, if I was to tell you that that is only the measly sum of 1,357 dirhams a day. I mean, what do you say? Wait, don't answer
go on,
now.
I'm not answering.
Let me tell you what it includes. You get business class flights to London. Now, you've not been in that part of the plane, but it's beautiful. It's big.
Yeah.
It's spacious.
Can you lie flat?
Nice to you. You can lie flat if you want to.
Right.
All meals are included on the cruise ship.
Yeah.
That means you can go and get prawns and tomato sauce whenever you want to.
like 10 times a day.
You can choose which one of the 8 restaurants you want to go to.
Right.
24-hour room service, which you'll need because I know you can be messy. Excursions in all 113 ports. Staff tips.
Very important.
You don't have to give any staff
Very
tips.
Very important.
They're
all
included.
The tips are included. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And daily gloating Facebook posts because there's free Wi-Fi.
All right. Well, as you're breaking it down like this, it's not too painful anymore.
8 months sailing around the world. That would mean that you wouldn't get to see me for 8 months.
All right. That's, you know... factors in rather nicely.
You don't seem too depressed about that, Mark.
No, not really. Well, you know, we could keep in touch on Facebook.
Anyway, it's food for thought, but I did find, I was looking at people who've done this. There's one guy called Mario Salcedo.
Yeah.
He's been living on cruise ships for the past 20 years. He doesn't work there, he just lives on them.
He just lives on cruise ships?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a doctor on board as you're getting older.
Okay.
To look after you if you get ill.
Yeah, I could use that.
So, yes, I thought you might like that.
Yeah, I think I do. Where am I going to raise the 333,000 dirhams, I suppose?
You must have saved that by now.
Is the only issue. You think so?
You must have. Tell me you have.
I might have. Because we're doing something on pensions a bit later, aren't we?
We will, after 3 o'clock. We'll be talking about expats not being able to afford to retire.
Yeah.
We're heading to Twitter first, though. And isn't it true that sometimes a tweet can instantly bring to light a problem that we never knew was a problem in the first place until we saw that tweet?
Absolutely.
So Matt Haig, who is the author of best-selling books including How to Stop Time and Reasons to Stay Alive, he tweeted the other day, "I vote to ban voicemails." Now, people shared this all over the place. It was liked 5,400 times.
Right.
It was shared more than 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And I thought, looking at this, when was the last time that you left a voicemail or listened to one that someone had left for you?
It is so strange. It is so strange that you've actually come up with this today, because I got, for the first time, a voicemail from my son this morning. This morning, when I was in work.
How did you know, though? Because I wouldn't know if there were any messages on my phone, voice messages. I'd never ring the number, check. Why would I?
Yeah, I don't know how I knew I got it. But anyway, he said, Bangkok, Bangkok, Bangkok. Because that's where we're going.
Right.
And he said, vape, 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 which is one of his favourite clothing brands. And Jordans, 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 which were his favourite shoes.
And that's it?
That was the voicemail, yeah.
What did you take from that? What are you meant to do with that?
Can't wait to get to Bangkok and buy some new Jordan shoes.
And does he want you to pay for them?
Oh, yeah.
That's why you can't afford this cruise.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have had kids.
It's all gone in shoes. I know.
Well, I don't think anyone else is using voicemail anymore. And I think he might have been in a certain state when he sent you that message.
Maybe he was.
People started responding to this tweet with tweets like, "Seconded, when can people already reach me by text, WhatsApp, work email, personal email, Twitter DMs, Instagram DMs, Facebook Messenger, snail mail and phone? Why would you leave a voicemail?" It's so true.
It's just so true. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking why he did that now. Because he's on all of them. He's on most social, you know, he's all over social media. Why would he do that? I will ask him after the show.
Ask him. Another one. "I find voicemail notifications so stressy that I went as far as finding out how to turn them off and then turned them off. I kid you not. It is important. If it's important, people will text or they'll call again. I would never listen to a message, no matter who left it."
Really?
Never.
You just would not. Say your dad sends you a voicemail.
No.
You wouldn't listen?
No. He'd ring back. You have to pay for it as well, I think. You used to have to pay quite a lot to listen to your messages.
Okay.
Remember back in the day?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I won't be listening to any messages.
Okay.
So what do you think? Should we get rid of voicemail? Would you miss it? If we had the power to just get rid of it right now, no more voicemail. Are you bothered in the slightest? Let us know.
Yeah.
We're going to have more stories from around the world on the way. There's a new book that claims all successful people have one thing in common in the mornings. Now, are you one of these people who are already doing this? Because if not, you really need to be. So
what did I miss? What did I miss? Now, the travel industry has been taking knocks for years. We've been leaving one-star reviews, moaning about the efficiency of staff in restaurants, complaining that our rooms were not as clean as we'd expected. And now, they have to get their revenge. You got to get ready for the big payback.
Negative guest reviews can have real consequences, you know, say travellers who've received them. Have you ever had a negative review about yourself?
A negative review. I mean, you know, I don't have an Airbnb or anything, or a, you know, nothing. That I am renting a little place out, and I've had a few whinges about, can you change the AC because it doesn't have a remote control, little things like that.
You know. But you've never done one of these things where you're rated as a human being who's used
as a human
something.
Being.
Yeah.
No, not really.
Ah, okay, that does happen quite a lot. If you use things like Airbnb, also Uber as well. I think you can now rent the person who's taking the ride with you on Uber.
Okay,
it's quite interesting. So yes, the people are being rated as well as the hosts now, and a host can actually refuse to rent to you based on your rating. Uber drivers can rate you as a passenger, so a driver might decide not to be matched with you. You might look there and think, oh, there's someone who's really close, why isn't he coming for me? And you might not really understand why he hasn't matched
because to you. Because I've been blacklisted, because I was, you know, maybe shouting at a driver or something.
Maybe.
Or I didn't leave any tip.
That could be it.
Yeah.
The review wars are unlikely to affect you if you were an occasional participant in the sharing economy, that's what they call it. And you can easily switch to a hotel or a rental car, but for the growing number of travellers who do rely on vacation rentals and shared rides, it can be a bit confusing for them, it can be a cause for concern. And in a sense, it is time that the tables are turned on guests, I think, particularly the ones who happily will slap an undeserved one-star rating on a host without really considering the consequences. Have you ever rated anyone badly?
No, I've only rated positive stuff. I'm just the kind of guy, if you know, there's a place that I don't like, if I've not enjoyed it, I just won't go back. But I won't actually go up there and slap them down. And, you know, maybe they're having a bad day. I don't know. No, I don't leave bad reviews.
I've left bad reviews for people who have used my Airbnb if they've been badly behaved.
I mean, you have had some badly behaved.
Yeah, and it depends on the circumstances. If it's a right mess, it's an awful pain to clean up, then I'll leave a bad review about them.
Yeah.
One of them found a supply of something the other day and drank a bottle. and we didn't leave a bad review for them because we were like, there's possibly times when you would do that yourself. Some things you can forgive. But when it comes to getting good service, the golden rule that works very well in the sharing economy is to be nice. That's what you're going to be. More specifically, friendliness, understanding and respect are key. And there's a bit of advice on how to avoid a bad review as well.
Yeah, with Uber, be considerate. Don't slam the door as you enter or leave the vehicle, and don't be rude to the driver. And also, don't make a mess. You know, don't be leaving crisps and popcorn all over the back of the car.
Right, with Airbnb, don't leave a mess as well, but be honest about the number of guests on your booking, especially if they charge you more for more people to stay. And be polite to your host when you meet them, if you meet them. But when it comes to leaving your review, they say leave a nice review, but don't lie in it, because you don't want people to go there after you and not have a good experience either. You've kind of got to be a bit honest, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's all about being honest, isn't it?
And if anyone would like to review our show today, feel free. Be as honest as you want. We're happy to take it.
We're going
to
get some flying remarks for that one, aren't we? Right then, how do you start your mornings is the big question.
How do you start your morning? Do you have a routine?
Pretty much, yeah. I'll wake up, you know, and think, oh, there's a little bit of light coming through there. I'll just reach for my iPad and have a look if there's any messages.
Why are you laughing?
Or any likes on Facebook, because I know you're not going to like it. So I'll look at my Facebook first, then I'll maybe go to a newspaper and see what the headlines are and, you know, try and get myself into the world. Then I'll get up and I'll put my t-shirt on and walking shoes and go for a 10-minute walk.
Yep.
Or a bit longer, maybe 15-20-minute walk. Come back and then it's time to have my coffee and my breakfast.
Right.
That's it.
Every single day the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a creature of habit.
I've slipped into a bit of a routine at the moment as well. Like, I wake up at about 7 o'clock, go downstairs, make breakfast for all my housemates. So there's four of us living in the house.
You are so good.
At the moment. So I do the breakfast.
Yeah.
And then after that, I take my husband to work, drop him off in me pyjamas.
Really? You haven't
I hope I never break
what
down.
What if you get a flat? What if you get a puncture?
Well,
you've got to get out of the car in your pyjamas.
I know. And I don't take a phone or anything. So I'm hoping that I don't ever break down. Living on the edge, Mark.
I think you should take a phone.
Living on the edge.
At least you can phone a friend to say, can you come and change the wheel?
I wouldn't have any credit even if I did take the phone, so it wouldn't matter. Anyway, and then I get back and then I do all of my work, and then at 12 I get a shower and then I come into work after that.
Okay.
And I check my emails after I've done all my work.
So I'm kind of ahead of you. I think I'm waking up around 5.
5 o'clock?
Yeah, 5:30.
Wowzers.
Yeah.
Well, there's a website called My Morning Routine, which is why we're talking about this today. They have interviewed and extracted data on the morning routines of hundreds of successful individuals around the world. Would you say you're a successful individual?
Yeah, kind of. I'm all right.
What they've discovered is that almost none of the world's best and brightest leave their mornings to chance. This is not a coincidence. Successful people have all got a morning routine.
Wake up, it's a beautiful morning. Feel the sunshine and fall your eyes. Wake up, it's a beautiful. Wake up, we want to be the very last time.
So the choices that we make during the first hour or so of our mornings determine whether we have productivity and peace of mind for the rest of the day, guys. If you don't dip into your inner reservoirs of energy, they say, and focus and calm first thing, then you won't stand a chance.
Now, even if your first action upon waking is simply going to the bathroom, this forms the beginning of a habit stack, which is a series of linked actions. And it's harder to build a good habit stack from scratch in the afternoon, since our willpower is pretty much worn down by the stresses of the day.
Never seen those two words together before, but I like them. I can see them on a t-shirt. Habit stack.
A habit stack.
I can even see a shop called Habit Stack.
Yeah, what would they sell? What would they sell? Habits?
No, I'm thinking tables and chairs. I don't know why. Yeah. It's where my mind went with it. So you do need structure in your morning. It's all about routine. We've talked about our routines, and I think the routines of some really successful people might make you feel a little bit lazy compared to the stuff that we do in the morning. This made me quite sad when I read it today.
Sherry Lansing, she's 73, former president of 20th Century Fox and CEO of Paramount Pictures, and the first woman to head a Hollywood movie studio, was asked, what's your morning routine?
She said, unless I have a very early morning, I'll wake up between 7:30 and 8 o'clock at the latest. Call the office right away. I'll see to my emails. I'll address anything that wasn't completed the night before or anything else on my to-do list whilst I'm having my breakfast. I'll get physical copies of the newspapers and try and read them over breakfast before I work out.
Yeah.
Which she does 4 times a week, she says.
Good for her.
She does Pilates on Mondays and Wednesdays, and on Tuesdays and Thursdays, she runs on the treadmill for 50 minutes and does weights for 40 minutes. 73.
That is amazing, isn't it? I'm definitely not in Sherry Lansing's league. No wonder I'm not CEO of Paramount Pictures.
Me neither. Gutted, but I thought, you know what? Crack on, there'll be people who are not as good as that. And then I came across Anna Marie Cox, who's 45. She's a political columnist and culture critic. And they asked her what her morning routine was.
She says, I get up between 7 a.m. and 7:30 a.m. When I pray and set an intention for the day. If I have time, I'll do a 5-minute meditation, a morning pages, filling 3 sides of paper with stream of conscious writings. Ideally, I've waited until after the meditative stuff to check my phone to make sure nothing has blown up, literally or figuratively. If things are relatively normal, I'll make my coffee, a ritual unto itself, and I'll read something not on the screen for 20 to 30 minutes. If things are not normal, if there's some huge story that will overtake my day anyway, I'll turn on the TV and start reading up on it online.
She fills 3 sides of paper with a stream of conscious writing.
That's a lot, isn't it?
When she wakes up, she reads a book for 20 to 30 minutes in the morning.
I know.
We've got to be better than this, Mark.
No, we can't. I don't think we can compete.
Well, how to create a winning morning routine. Here we go. Write down your new routine. Be as specific as necessary. Don't feel like you have to change your morning routine all at once. And there was a few great stats. Can I just throw a couple at you?
Yeah, go on.
Really good ones that came out. People sleep for an average of 7 hours 31 minutes, they found out in this study.
Yeah.
They found out that 71% of us use an alarm clock.
Okay.
47% of people check their email the minute they wake up. This one, I was so shocked by, because I'm not one of them. 78% of people exercise
As soon as they wake up. Before they have the breakfast.
What's wrong with us?
I know. There's a lot wrong with us, Steph.
And when it comes to having breakfast, 56% of people drink water first thing in the morning. Only 28% drink coffee.
Really?
And the tea people have got some work to do on their marketing. Only 9% of people drink tea in the morning.
Nay.
There you have it.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.